Viruses make their way through camp like wildfire. Dysentery, grippe. A bad case of influenza could take down the entire show. I peer over her shoulder. Theo lies on one of the berths, tiny and alone, buttressed by a rolled blanket so he will not fall off. Is he all right? Berta's brow wrinkles with concern. A high fever, she says, not shielding me from the truth. We're doing everything we can to bring it down, but it's so difficult with the little ones. My stomach twists. Please let me help. She shakes her head firmly. There's nothing you can do. She closes the door. Astrid, I think, running for the sleeper car. But her berth is still neatly made, and she is not there. Desperately, I race from the train across the fairgrounds in the direction of Peter's cabin, the only other place Astrid might be at this hour. It is nearly 10, late to be showing up unannounced. Too worried to care about interrupting sleep or whatever else they may be doing, I knock on the door. A minute later, Astrid appears in a dressing gown. It is the first time she has been with Peter at night since we went on the road. Taking in her tousled hair, I am furious. I had left Theo with her. How dare she hand him off to someone else? But I cannot risk angering her now. Help me, I beg. It's Theo. He's sick. Astrid stares at me with cold, blank eyes, then closes the door in my face. My heart sinks. Even if she hates me, surely she won't refuse to help Theo. But then she reappears, dressed, and starts toward the train. I run to keep up. He was fine when I put him down earlier, Astrid says. Elsie was minding him, and you said you would be right back. Her tone is accusing. How long has he been sick? I don't know. They won't let me see him. I follow her onto the train. At the entrance to the sick car, she turns back, holding up her hand. Wait here, she instructs. Theo needs me, I say, grabbing her arm. She shakes me off. You won't be doing him any good if you get sick, too. What about you? I press. I'm out of the show, at least, she replies. But if you get sick, the act will be ruined. It is about the show. Always about the show. None of that matters to me. I just want to see Theo. There's no time to argue, Astrid says. I'll be right back. Astrid closes the door, and I wait outside, hearing Theo wail. Guilt surges through me. How could I have left him? An hour ago I'd been with Luke, secretly glad to be freed for a moment from the burden of taking care of a child. I hadn't meant it, really. And even though I know it is not possible, part of me wonders if that somehow brought him danger. From the corridor between the two rail cars where Astrid has left me to wait, I gaze out the grimy train window in the direction of the village. We have no doctor, and the only medicines are the home remedies that Berta keeps in her kit. I would ask Luke for help if I thought it would do any good. But we can't risk taking Theo to a town because of the questions it might raise about who he is and where he came from. Surely someone will discover the secrets we've been keeping when they see he is circumcised. Suddenly, the wailing inside the sick car stops. I am at first relieved that Theo has settled down, but I can't help thinking that something is wrong. I throw open the door, not caring about the rules. My heart stops. Theo has gone stiff, and his arms and legs jerk. What happened? I cry. I don't know, Astrid says, her face more scared than I have ever seen. Berta rushes over. "A fever fit," she says. Then turns to me. "He needs a bess of cool water. Fetch it quickly." I stand paralyzed, not wanting to leave Theo again, even for a single second. "Hurry!" she barks. I run from the train and fill the first bucket I see at the pump. The water splashes out the sides, so it is only half-filled by the time I reach the sick car. Astrid takes it from me at the door and pours it into the large porcelain bowl that doubles as a baby bath. "Another!" Berta calls. When I return, I see her putting a cup of clear liquid in the tub. "Vinegar," she explains. I start toward Theo, but Astrid holds up her hand, warding me off. "You can't come in." I try to push past her. "I have to see him. If something should happen..." I can't finish the thought. Suddenly, I am back at the girls' home, my own child being ripped from my arms. Astrid takes Theo from Berta. Seeing the concern on Astrid's face and the tender way she holds him, I know that she loves him as I do. Still, I ache to have him in my arms. Astrid lowers Theo into the bath. I hold my breath, willing him to fuss as he normally would. He remains still, but his body seems to relax in the water. "I remember now," Astrid says, not taking her eyes off Theo. "They call it a fever seizure. One of the circus children had it a few years back." "A seizure?" I repeat. "It sounds serious." "The fit itself looks much scarier than it is," Berta interjects. "But the fever is the problem. We must get that down." Her voice is grim. A few minutes later, Astrid takes Theo from the tub and dries him, putting him back into his sleeper because we have no other clothes for him here. His eyes are open, and he is calmer now. Astrid touches his brow and frowns. "He's still too hot." Berta pulls a packet from her kit. "I bought this at the Apotheke before we left Darmstadt. They said it would work on a fever." "But is it for an adult or child?" I ask. Too much could be dangerous, or even lethal. "Adult," Berta replies. "But if we give him just a little..." "We don't have a choice." She pours a bit of the powder onto a spoon and mixes it with water, then spoons it into Theo's mouth. He gags in protest and spits up. Astrid wipes his face and shirt with a rag, and I wish that I could do it myself. "Should we give him more?" I ask. Astrid shakes her head. "There's no telling how much of it he got, and we won't know for a few hours if it's working." The fortune teller Drina said something about illness, I suddenly recall. How could she have known? I wait for Astrid to ridicule me for listening to her. "I stopped having my fortune read," she says darkly instead. "Because you don't think it's true? Because there are some things you just don't want to know." Berta comes over and inspects Theo. "He just needs to rest now. Let's hope the medicine works." "And what, I wonder, if it does not?" I don't dare to ask. Berta walks to the berths at the far end of the rail car, where two other patients lie. After she has tended to them, she dims the lights and squeezes herself into an empty bed, her thickness spilling over into the aisle. Astrid sinks into one of the berths, rocking Theo. Watching her from the doorway, my arms ache. "He likes to be held up." "I know." Astrid has been with Theo almost as long as I have. She knows what to do. Not being able to hold him is killing me, though. "I'll watch him all night, I promise. But you should go to sleep. He's going to need you when he is better. You think he'll be okay? I ask with hope and relief. I do, she responds, her voice more certain now. I still cannot leave him, though. Instead, I sink down to the cold, filthy floor of the train corridor. Those are pretty flowers, Astrid remarks. I had nearly forgotten about the daffodils in my shirt button and hair. They're from the mayor's son, right? I do not answer. What did he want, anyway? Just to talk, I reply. Really? Astrid's tone is skeptical. Maybe he just likes me, I retort, somewhere between hurt and annoyed. Is that so very hard to believe? Mingling is forbidden, you know. You and Peter being together is too, I want to point out. And his father is a collaborator, for God's sake. Her voice rises now, causing Berta to stir at the far end of the train car. Luke isn't like that, I protest. And his father? She asks pointedly. Luke says he has to cooperate to protect the village. I hear the weakness in my own words. To stop the Germans from doing even worse. Stop? She spits. There is no stopping them. Didn't what happened at the show the other night teach you anything? The mayor is saving his own skin at the expense of his people. Nothing more. Several seconds of silence pass between us. What? Do you want to date this boy? She demands. Marry him? No, of course not. I protest quickly. I had not really thought about Luke beyond the kiss we had shared. But I wonder now, why is it so awful to want the ordinary things? Astrid herself had once done the same. Now she sees it as a betrayal. I know that you like him, Noah, she continues. But you mustn't trust too much, or let yourself be fooled. I can tell from the way she speaks that she thinks I am innocent and naive. Never assume that you know the mind of another. I don't. Even Peter? I ask. Especially him, she says sharply. She clears her throat. This nonsense with you and the boy, it will end, of course, when we go in a few days. Luke's promises to find me in the next village seem too silly to share. No man is worth the whole world, she adds. I know, I say. Memories of the German looming large in my mind. He had taken everything from me. My honor, my family. Of course, Astrid doesn't know this. My guilt looms like a shadow. Astrid has given us so much, and still I am living the lie I told when I first arrived and did not know if I could trust her. Astrid leans back against the berth, still holding Theo. Neither of us speaks further. The floor of the train grows cold and hard beneath me, but I don't want to move. The shadows grow long between us. I lean my head back and close my eyes. I dream that I'm outside in the darkness, the same bitter cold as the night I'd taken Theo and left. He is not an infant this time, though, but a toddler of almost 2, older and heavier. The ground is icy beneath my feet, and the biting wind fights me every step. There is a bundle on the ground, dark amid the whiteness of the earth. I stop to examine it. Another child. I pick it up, but as I do, Theo falls from my arms. Desperately, I dig through the snow, trying to find him. But he is lost. I awake in a sweat, cursing myself for sleeping. Astrid sits awake, staring out the window in the distance. Behind her, the sky is a lighter gray, signaling that it is almost dawn. She is still holding Theo, who is completely still. I leap to my feet and wait for Estrid to protest as I move closer, but she does not.
His fever has broken, she says instead.
Theo has a faint rash on his skin, but otherwise he is fine. His skin cool. My eyes burn with relief. The blanket swaddling him is drenched in sweat. He half opens his eyes and smiles faintly at me.
You should still be careful not to get sick,
Estrid admonishes, and I brace myself for her to make me leave once more. Instead, she walks to the far end of the carriage, still holding Theo. I fight the urge to follow as she confers with Berta, who has risen and is feeding one of the other patients. A moment later, she returns with a baby bottle.
Let me see if I can get him to drink a bit.
He sucks weakly at the bottle, then drifts back to sleep. Estrid moves to set the bottle down. The color drains from her face suddenly, and she starts to double over, seemingly sickened.
Here,
she says, seeming to forget her own caution as she hands Theo to me. I draw his warmth close, gratefully. Estrid sinks limply to one of the berths.
Are you feeling sick?
I pray that she has not caught Theo's virus.
No.
Her tone is certain, but her forehead and upper lip are damp with sweat.
Then what?
My concern grows. She has seemed more tired than usual lately, and she has been so very terse. There is something familiar, too, about the grayness of her face.
Estrid, are you?
I hesitate, not wanting to finish the question for fear of offending her if I am wrong.
Are you expecting?
I ask. But she does not answer.
You are, aren't you?
Her eyes widen as she realizes I have guessed her secret. Her hand rises to her stomach instinctively, a gesture I recognize from my earlier self.
Oh,
I exclaim, and suddenly it is a year ago. The realization of my own missed periods and what it all meant coming back like it happened yesterday. Should I offer congratulations? I proceed carefully, as though approaching a snake. There was a time not so very long ago when a child had not been happy news for me. It had been pure dread. I don't know how Estrid feels. Watching her with Theo, I've long suspected how very much she wanted a child. She is older, though, and a Jew. Does she want one now? I search her face for cues as to how I should react. It is wrecked with self-doubt. There is so much I want to say to comfort her. I move closer, put my arm around her.
You will be a wonderful mother.
A child is a blessing.
It's more complicated than that, she replies. Having a child now is just so hard.
I understand, I say too quickly. Her brow wrinkles.
How can you possibly? I mean, I know you care for Theo, but that is hardly the same.
No, it isn't. I agree silently. I love Theo as my own, but having him can never replace that feeling of holding my child in my arms for the first time. But she doesn't know this. And she cannot really know me or understand what I am saying because of my secret. I should tell her. How can I possibly, though? The one thing that makes me who I am will surely make Estrid hate me and want to be done with me for good. The need to tell her wells up in me once more, too powerful to ignore. I can't hold back any longer.
Estrid, I need to tell you something.
Remember when I told you about my working at the train station?
She nods, Yes. After you left your family. I didn't really explain why I had to leave. You said your father was unkind. Her voice is uneasy. It was more than that. I tell her then in my own words, everything about the soldier and the baby whom I bore by him, without trying to justify what I had done, the way I should have months earlier. When I finish, I hold my breath, waiting for Astrid to tell me it is all right. But she does not. Her face is a thundercloud.
You slept with a Nazi, she says darkly.
Though it had all happened so long before I had met her, my actions still seem a betrayal. It hadn't been like that, though. To me, love had been love, or what I supposed love felt like, and I hadn't understood that there were other things. I wait for her to scream at me, ask how I could have done it. Looking back, I'm not sure myself. But it had felt so natural at the time. I did, I say finally. Eric was a Nazi too, I add. Even as the words come out, I know I have overstepped.
That was different.
Her eyes blaze.
He was my husband. And it was before.
Before the war had changed everyone and forced us to choose sides.
You got pregnant. That's why your family kicked you out.
Yes. I had no choice but to go to the girls' home in Bensheim. I thought they would help me. Instead, they took my child. My voice breaks as I say this last bit. The first time I have spoken it aloud to anyone. Her brows draw close.
Who did?
The doctor and nurse at the girls' home. At first they told me that he would be placed with the Lebensborn program, but his hair and eyes were so dark. I trail off. I don't know where they took him. I wanted to keep him, but they wouldn't let me. Someday I will find him, I vow. I expect her to laugh or mock my dream, or at least tell me it is impossible. But she nods grimly.
You mustn't lose hope. There could well be records.
I wanted to tell you. Instead, I had been too cowardly. And the mayor's son,
does he know?
I shake my head. No one else knows. Only you. She stares at me. Several seconds of silence pass between us. Will she order me to leave the circus? It is the worst possible timing, of course. Theo is too sick to travel, and I won't go without him. Are you mad? I ask finally.
I want to be, but it isn't my place. You made a mistake, as we all do, and you paid dearly for it.
My shoulders slump with relief. She has forgiven me. My worries bubble up again. Just one more thing, I say, and she braces, as though I am about to reveal another secret, even worse. You won't tell the others, will you?
No. They cannot know.
She agrees.
Others might not be so understanding. No more secrets, though.
I nod, gratefully.
Agreed. But Noah,
Astrid says,
you need to stop seeing him. I understand the mistake you made in the past. You were young, and you could not help it. This thing with the mayor's son is different, though. Surely you can see the danger you are bringing to Theo, and to all of us.
I open my mouth to protest. I want to tell her again that Luke is nothing at all like his father.
but outsiders spell danger for Estrid and the others at the circus. She has forgiven my awful truth about the German. Giving up Luke is the price I am to pay in exchange. Estrid is watching me closely, waiting for my answer. All right. I manage at last. I scarcely know Luke, but the notion of giving him up hurts more than it should. Promise? She presses, still not satisfied. I swear it, I say solemnly, though the idea of never seeing Luke again makes my insides ache.
Good,
she says, seeming satisfied. We should head back to the sleeper. What about Theo? She looks toward Berta, who nods. Now that his fever has broken, he's well enough to go back. Estrid stands and starts in the direction of the sleeper car. Then she stops and turns back, her face falling. My body, she frets, referring once more to her pregnancy. If I can no longer fly, it is not vanity. Performing is her means of survival, and she worries that the baby will change all that. My body bounced right back after I had the baby. How strange it feels to be able to say that openly, at least to her. Yours will too. I take her arm. Come, you must be exhausted. How long have you known, anyway? I ask in a low voice as we move through the dark, still corridor.
Just a few days.
I'm sorry I didn't tell you sooner, she adds. I nod, trying not to feel hurt. It was just hard to accept myself, much less tell anyone else. I understand, I reply, meaning it. Does Peter know? She nods.
Only him.
Please, you mustn't tell anyone. She begs, trusting me now to keep her secret, where before I had not. I nod. I would sooner die than tell. Having a child, she says. It's terrifying. How far along are you? I fear I am asking her too many questions, but I cannot help it.
About 2 months.
I count on my fingers. We will be back in the winter quarters with plenty of time. She is silent, and a puzzled look crosses her face. You are going back, aren't you? I ask.
Peter doesn't want us to,
she replies. I am surprised. It is hard to imagine Estrid and Peter anywhere but the circus. Luke had spoken of leaving too, but of course the notion of going with a boy I had just met was a fantasy. I'll go back, though. What other choice do I have? Darmstadt has been my family's home for centuries. Other than Berlin, it was all she had known.
But you could leave, you know.
Get out before we go back. I am unsure how to respond. I had never planned to belong to this misfit group with their odd life. Leaving the circus and fleeing with Theo had always been my goal. I did not have to stay. I was not a prisoner or fugitive. I could thank Herr Neuhoff and pick up Theo and go. But it is more than just the shelter that keeps me here. Estrid cares for us. She is more family than my own parents had ever been. And I feel part of the circus, as surely as if I had been born here. I am not ready to go. Not yet.
No,
I reply. Whatever happens now, I am with you. At least for now.
Chapter 16. Estrid. A buzz runs through the train car late Sunday afternoon as we wash our costumes and prepare for the following day. Herr Neuhoff has called a meeting in 30 minutes. The girls around me whisper nervously. What could he possibly want or have to tell us? Though I do not join in their chatter, my stomach tingles with unease. Herr Neuhoff is not one for large gatherings, preferring instead to speak with each performer or laborer individually, as needed. These days, the unexpected can only mean trouble. Noah picks up Theo from the berth and studies his face uneasily. It has been a week since the night he fell ill. The fever had not come back, and he looks so healthy, I sometimes wonder if the whole thing was a bad dream. I start to walk from the train car, avoiding the sight of myself in the mirror as I pass. They say there are women who look beautiful in pregnancy, and perhaps that is true. I've never seen one. The circus women grow fat like cows, sitting around, unable to perform. Their bodies do not quite come back to what they had been. My figure is only slightly changed, the faintest of bumps if one looks closely. But it is just a matter of time. Though I do not look bad yet, I feel awful. The nausea that had started that first day on the trapeze has worsened, causing me to vomit 3 or 4 times a day. There is no extra food to spare once I have wasted mine being sick, though Noah tries to slip me bits of her own rations when I let her. But it doesn't matter. I cannot hold down a thing. My empty stomach burns like I have eaten something too spicy all day long, and at night too, keeping me awake. "Eat something," Peter pled the previous night. "For the baby." He'd brought my dinner to the train when I did not come to the cook tent. It was a watery stew, enriched with bits of meat and turnips he'd added to it from his own rations. But the once appetizing aroma of onions made my stomach turn, and I pushed it away, gesturing in Noah's direction. "Give it to Theo." Ironically, as I've grown sicker, Peter has brightened. The baby has changed everything for him. I haven't seen him drink at all since I told him. And the melancholy in his eyes is gone, replaced by merriment and hope. I pull out my valise to put on some powder to conceal my paleness before the meeting. The other girls hurry from the carriage, but Noah lingers behind with Theo. I pat my hair and start out. "Wait," Noah says. I turn back. She is biting her lip as if she wants to say something. Instead, she thrusts the baby at me awkwardly. "Can you hold him while I change? He never fusses at you." I take him. It is true that while I had never cared for a baby before, Theo seems to warm to my arms. "Ready," Noah says a few minutes later, her voice a bit pinched, as if nervous or excited. She is dressed more smartly than I would expect for a Sunday, too, her skirt and blouse crisply pressed. I carry Theo outside. The late-day sky is an eggshell blue. The air is balmy and fragrant, the first real spring evening. We pass the Big Top. Despite feeling ill and having no appetite, I have not stopped flying. I swing harder and higher than ever, perhaps harder than I should. I am not, of course, trying to jeopardize the pregnancy I had so dearly wanted all my life. The baby would have to understand, though, that this is our life as well. I need to know that they can exist together. Closer to the backyard, I can hear the murmur of the others gathered. But as we round the corner of the tent, the voices hush. The full circus is present, performers and laborers intermingled. They stand not in the main part of the backyard close to the Big Top. Rather, they have assembled at the far edge, where the trees meet the clearing in a kind of semicircle, forming a grove. A canopy of leaves has been prepared, branches secured across the outstretched limbs of two oak trees. Peter waits beneath it, beside Herr Neuhoff, face bright with anticipation, regal in a dark suit and top hat I've never seen. I wonder if he brought it with him from Russia. The crowd seems to part as I near into two distinct clusters, forming a sort of aisle down the middle between them. My skin prickles. What is going on? I turn to Noah. She smiles, a faint twinkle of excitement in her eyes, and I realize she had stalled me with the baby on purpose. She hands me some wildflowers, wrapped with string. I don't understand, I say. Noah takes Theo from me and brushes back a lock of hair that has fallen close to my face. Every bride needs a bouquet, she replies, and her eyes dart toward Peter. As if unsure she should have spoken. Bride? I look at Peter questioningly, but his gaze is unflinching and intent. He means to marry me here, in front of the circus. A wedding. The ground seems to wobble beneath my feet. There can't really be one, of course. Our union is against the law in France, just as surely as my marriage to Eric had been in Germany. It would certainly never be recognized by any government, but still, to take my vows with Peter and have our child born in wedlock to a real family. In my wildest dreams, I had not imagined it. One of the cellists from the orchestra begins to play, a song too soft and somber to be a wedding march. The circus folk stand in a semicircle, faces aglow, a little bit of life affirmation for each so very needed. I take in the smiling expressions around me. Have they guessed my secret? No, they are happy for this moment of light in the darkness. And for us. For the first time since leaving my family in Darmstadt so many years ago, I feel as though I am finally home. Noah leads me forward to the canopy. I reach for her, wanting her to stand up with me so I am not alone. But she puts my hand in Peter's and takes a step back. I look into his eyes. You plan this? He smiles.
I suppose I should have asked you,
he says, but then he lowers to one knee.
Astrid, will you marry me?
It's a bit late for that, isn't it? I chide. There is faint laughter from the others. My mind whirls. I had not planned to get married again, to Peter or anyone else. Marriages are about forever, and there is nothing certain about that anymore. I had not planned for the baby or any of this either, though. Peter is kneeling before me, his face so hopeful. He wants to make us a family. And so do I realize. I see then, as if watching a movie, my life with Peter since I had joined the Circus Neuhoff. How he has protected me, and how close we have grown day by day. The nights without him are empty, and no space complete until he is there. Noah had been right, not just about Peter's feelings, but mine. He had gotten into my heart when I wasn't even looking. Part of me curses myself for letting it happen. At the same time, though, I would not want to go forward any other way. That doesn't change the reality of our situation, or the danger marrying me could bring to him. I lower my head to his.
Are you certain?
I whisper low, not wanting the others to hear. Though he stands in front of me, willing to risk everything, part of me still cannot believe it. How can he want to take this chance after all that he has been through? He nods.
Never more so, he replies, voice clear and unwavering.
Then yes, I would love to marry you,
I say more loudly. I smile, batting back the tears that sting at my eyes. Herr Neuhoff clears his throat.
Well, let's get started,
he says as Peter stands.
There are few words to describe love in the least likely of places, which is also
the most beautiful, he begins, his voice a softer version of the soto baritone he uses in The Ring. He opens a worn Bible and reads,
And Ruth said, Entreat me not to leave thee, or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go. And where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God my God.
As he reads, my eyes drift upward to the canopy. To the onlookers, it is a simple bough of branches and leaves. But I know that Peter, himself not Jewish, has designed it as a chuppah, in a silent concession to my family. I wish for my father to give me away, my brothers to hoist us high on chairs after, as Hava Nagila plays, just like when Matthias and Marcus had married the Hungarian horseback riders, Jewish sisters. I have done this before without them, of course, standing before a justice of the peace with Eric in Berlin. Then I pretended not to mind, thinking that my family would be there always. Now I feel longing and grief. I touch my stomach, thinking of the grandchild my parents will never know. My missing family is not the only difference. Once when I had taken my vows with Eric, I had been young and unafraid. I had thought that nothing could touch us. Now I know that this union will not shield us from whatever lies ahead. Rather, it will make my burden Peter's and his mine. Peter is not young and naive either, though. I think of the wife and daughter he lost, who surely cannot be far from his mind today. Yet, he has the courage to go forward, head lifted, eyes clear. For this, I love him more than ever. Herr Neuhoff finishes the passage.
Peter, you have something you want to say?
Peter pulls a piece of paper from his pocket and drops it. He stumbles as he bends to pick it up, his usual composure gone. His hand shakes, nervous as a young groom.
There is so little one can be certain of these days, he begins, voice wobbly. But finding a hand to hold while we walk this path makes even the most difficult of times better, and the strangest of villages home.
Around us, heads nod. Each circus performer has a past, his or her own memories of a home. Then he crumples the paper and jams it back into his pocket, so abruptly I wonder if he is having second thoughts.
Once I thought my life was over. When I came to Germany and joined the circus, I never thought I would find happiness again.
His voice grows clear and strong as he abandons the words he had written and speaks from the heart.
And then I met you, and it all changed. You made me believe again that good things were possible. I love you.
He looks down.
Astrid, is there anything you want to say?
Herr Neuhoff asks. Everyone is watching me expectantly. I had no idea and have nothing prepared.
It is hard to find a love you can trust,
I manage. I search for the words that I have not said until now, even to myself.
I am so very lucky. You make me feel stronger every day. I can face whatever is to come, as long as I am with you.
You are blessed indeed, Astrid and Peter, to have found one another.
Herr Neuhoff agrees, saving me from having to find further words. He turns to Peter.
Do you take this woman?
In Noah's arms, Theo coos his approval, and everyone chuckles. Peter's eyes are aglow as he places an antique metal band around my finger. Was it a family heirloom, or something he had purchased just for today?
I now pronounce you man and wife, Herr Neuhoff declares. A great cheer arises from the onlookers as Peter kisses me, and the musicians strike up a merry tune. Someone brings out a table and several bottles of champagne. Watching, I am touched by the details, the care with which the party has been planned. There are little trays of appetizers, simple foods made from rations that had been arranged to look grand.
Do your future together,
Herr Neuhoff proposes, raising a glass, and everyone toasts in agreement. I raise the glass to my lips. The party breaks up into smaller groups, drinking and enjoying a bit of merriment. Impromptu, some of the Romanian acrobats begin to dance, twirling in circles with their brightly patterned scarves, sequined skirts flaring like pinwheels. I try to relax and enjoy the party, but the colors and noise are overwhelming after all that has happened. I lean wearily against one of the tables. Across the crowd, Peter shoots me a knowing smile. Behind the dancers, something moves in the trees. I straighten and glimpse someone standing at the edge of the grove. Emmett, watching the party. I do not remember seeing him at the ceremony. He is Herr Neuhoff's son, and it is only natural that he would have been invited. But his presence makes me uneasy. The music grows livelier, and the dancers form a circle, drawing me and Peter into the center of it, then whirl around us like a speeding carousel. Peter takes my hands and begins to spin me in the direction opposite those who have gathered around us. The movement and music are dizzying. As we twirl, I see Noah, standing alone on the outside of the circle, seeming to want to join in, but not quite sure how. I break away from Peter and burst through the circle. Come, I say, taking her hand and leading her back into the center with me, making her one of us. She clasps my fingers gratefully. I hold her hand and Peter's too as we begin to dance, not caring if the others think it strange. I do not want Noah to be left out. But as we spin and I grow dizzy, I find myself clinging more tightly to her, needing her as much as she needs me to keep the world upright. The dance ends, and a slower song begins. It is an old Romanian song, the anniversary waltz. Noah and the others step away, and I know I am meant to dance only with Peter. He draws me close. He waltzes with more skill than I might have expected. But his movements are slowed and a bit clumsy from drink. As he hums the familiar tune, his lips buzzing against my ear, I can hear my mother singing the lyrics as my brother Jules played them on his violin. Oh, how we danced on the night we were wed. My eyes burn. I need to rest, I pant in Peter's ear when the song has ended.
Do you feel all right?
He asks, touching my cheek with concern. I nod.
I'll get you some water.
I'm fine, darling. You go enjoy the party,
I say, not wanting him to fuss over me. He starts off in the direction of the champagne. I lean against a chair, suddenly weak. A faint sweat breaks out on my brow, and my stomach begins to wobble. Not now, I think. I walk around to the side of one of the train cars out of sight, in search of a moment's quiet. Then I stop, hearing voices on the other side.
The ceremony was lovely,
Noah says to someone I cannot see. Her tone is uneasy. Then I hear Emmett.
If only it was real,
he says sarcastically. How dare he insult my marriage to Peter?
It is real,
Noah protests with as much courage as she can muster.
Even if the government is too foolish to recognize it.
Best to get married here, Emmett remarks. Before we go back, you know.
His tone is conspiratorial. There is a pause.
Back?
Noah's voice is filled with surprise. I hadn't mentioned my conversation with Herr Neuhoff, or the possibility that we would not be allowed to remain in France.
To Germany?
Astrid hasn't told you?
Of course she has,
Noah lies poorly. Tries to sound as though she is not surprised, but she cannot maintain the facade.
It isn't true,
she exclaims, and I wonder if she will cry.
My father says the French tour is being curtailed.
Your father tells you nothing.
I am surprised by the strength in Noah's voice.
Maybe you should just go home,
Emmett sneers.
Oh, that's right. You can't.
I stifle a gasp. How much does he know about Noah's past? I step into the light.
That's enough.
Emmett's eyes flicker at the realization that I heard what he'd said. For a second, I wonder if he will back down.
There's a reason she was all alone with a child when we found her,
Emmett says, seemingly undaunted. Over his shoulder, I see Noah's eyes widen, terrified that he has somehow learned the truth. Of course, Emmett is bluffing. He has to be.
I would never tell, and there's no other way he could have found out. The little tramp. The child has got to be hers.
Emmett spits in Noah's direction. Without thinking, I reach out and slap him so hard my palm stings. He steps away, staring at me in disbelief, the imprint of my hand bright red across his cheek.
You'll pay for that,
he swears.
Get lost before I call your father,
I say. Emmett slinks away, still clutching his cheek.
Thank you, Noah says to me when he is out of earshot. I don't understand. How could he possibly know about me?
I don't think he actually does, I say, and Noah seems to relax with relief.
I certainly didn't tell him. Most likely he was just fishing for information.
The truth is that secrets don't stay buried for long in the circus. They have a way of coming out. But telling Noah this would only worry her further. Noah casts her eyes downward.
Is it true, what Emmett said? Are we going back?
It isn't certain. Herr Neuhoff mentioned that the administration was threatening it. It was just a possibility, and I didn't want to upset you.
I'm not a child,
Noah says, a note of rebuke in her voice.
I know. I should have said something. But you don't have to go back, you know.
How could I leave the circus?
She asks earnestly, doubt clouding her eyes.
I could never go without you.
I smile, touched by her loyalty. A few months ago, she was a stranger to the circus, an outsider. Now, this life is all that she can imagine.
It is only a show, and no show can go on forever.
What about you?
She asks. So young, and always with so many questions.
As I've said before,
I won't run, and I won't hide again, I vow. They would have to take me first.
It is not so far to Switzerland,
she ventures, her eyes lifting to the hills.
Perhaps if we went together?
No, I turn to face her squarely. There are people who have vouched for me. People who would pay with their lives if I was gone. But not for you, I add. You can go.
I am with you to the end, she says, voice quavering slightly.
Let's not talk about it any more tonight, I say, patting her hand. Noah nods in agreement, and her eyes travel back toward the party.
The wedding was beautiful, she offers. I dream of such things.
I try not to laugh. The gathering in the woods is simple, far from elegant.
Doesn't every girl?
Noah adds.
Will you take his name?
I had not considered the question. Then I shake my head. I had changed who I was once. I could not do it again.
What were you doing all the way out here, anyway?
We should get back. I start toward the party, but Noah does not follow. Her eyes travel in another direction, away from the fairgrounds.
You aren't thinking of going to that boy again, are you?
No, of course not, she says too quickly.
Nothing but trouble can come of that. And you promised, I remind her.
Yes, she replies. I'm just tired, and I want to check on Theo. I had Elsie put him down after the ceremony.
I study her face, trying to decide whether to believe her.
Astrid,
I hear Peter's voice, fueled by liquor, call too loudly from the party.
I need to get back, I say. I understand,
Noah squeezes my hand.
And about before. Thank you.
Her voice is filled with gratitude. And then she turns and walks toward the train. I want to call after her and warn her again, but I do not. Instead, I start back to the gathering.
Chapter 17. Noah. Starting away from Astrid toward the train, I smile. I had known about the wedding. Peter had confided in me just a few hours earlier, and I conspired with him to surprise Astrid. I'd fretted that she might mind. Astrid was not one for surprises. But now I am glad to have been part of the plan. Peter and Astrid are together now, and about to become a family. She seems happy, really happy, for the first time since I've known her. I'm happy for her, but I can't help but wonder if things will change, whether Astrid will stay with Peter every night and become somehow less mine. I am suddenly lonely. Luke appears in my mind. I haven't seen him since the night Theo had fallen ill a week earlier. I hadn't been able to meet him the next night after the show as he asked. Theo, though better, had still been weak, and I had not wanted to risk leaving him. So I'd left Luke a note in the belly box. Brother sick. Can't come tonight. My note had disappeared, so I had known he read it. Or so I hoped. What if someone else had found it? Even though I'd been vague on purpose, there would still be questions. For days there had been no response, and I'd wondered if Luke could have lost interest so soon after our kiss, or had simply given up. I walked to the belly box now, scarcely daring to hope. Inside is a scrap of a page from a circus program, so crumpled that I wonder if someone had mistaken the compartment for a trash bin. I smooth out the paper. A message is written on the back in blurry charcoal. Tried to come see you. Liked watching you dance. Meet me at the town museum. Luke had been here tonight and had seen me dancing. I flush, excited and embarrassed at the same time. How had I not known? Worry nags at me then. The wedding was meant to be a secret. He should not have been here. But some part of me is